to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine, again visiting East Palestine, site of the toxic train derailment, comes as a bipartisan group of senators proposes new regulations for the railroad industry.
The bill would increase the maximum fines for safety violations. It would strengthen rules governing trains carrying hazardous materials. It will accelerate the timeline for phasing in safer tank cars.
White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre. The number of dead from a train accident in Greece now rising to at least 43 people. Pennsylvania man facing charges after authorities say the TSA found an explosive device in checked luggage at Lehigh Valley International Airport. Emergency crews trying to reach California mountain residents who are stranded in winter storms. San Bernardino County Board of Supervisors Chair Don Rowe.
Our number one priority is to get our residents the food, the medicine, and access that they need.
This is ABC News. A bill that would give President Biden the ability to ban TikTok in the U.S. has advanced out of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, could get a vote on the House floor. Lawmakers say the app is a threat to data privacy. Eli Lilly saying it will cap the monthly out-of-pocket cost of insulin at $35.
The White House is applauding this move by Eli Lilly, saying the company is taking action after President Biden called on pharmaceutical companies to bring down prices for all Americans. Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre told me Wednesday.
This is something that he's going to do. Using the bully pulpit as the president of the United States is an incredibly powerful tool.
Jean-Pierre would not say if the president made any direct personal appeals to executives at Eli Lilly ahead of the company's announcement, or if he's talking to executives at other pharmaceutical companies that produce insulin. Karen Travers, ABC News, The White House.
A Brooklyn man facing grand larceny charges for allegedly stealing an American Airlines bus from JFK Airport. Andy Field, ABC News.
From Oshkosh to Green Bay and points north, wherever you are in the Fox Valley, count on us to keep you connected, informed, and entertained. Civic Media.
Local radio for your community. Civic Media, broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnair. Here's what you need to know. Shared revenue will go up. Governor Evers making the pledge on Tuesday to the Counties Association that counties and municipalities will finally get the resources they need. The governor's budget devotes 20% of Wisconsin sales tax to funding shared revenue, increasing local government funding by more than $500 million annually. The budget would also allow Milwaukee County to impose an additional 1% sales tax, with half of that new money distributed to the city of Milwaukee. Other counties and cities with populations over 30,000 could also impose an additional 0.5% sales tax if approved by referendum under the governor's proposal, but the Republican co-chairs of the budget committee say they won't support any new taxes. Be careful on the ice. In some parts of Wisconsin, deadlines to remove ice shanties from lakes gets underway today. I'm Jane Matnair. This is Civic Media News.
5 hours of special spring primary election coverage. A dozen reporters, hosts, and political experts tracking results for you around Wisconsin.
Everything from your local races to the Supreme Court.
Janet Protasiewicz and Dan Kelly moving on to the general election.
Coverage you won't find anywhere else. And we're doing it all again for the important general election in April.
Elections or anytime, we're here for you. Your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
Rick Smith Show. where working people come to talk.
When we got back from the Working Class Heroes radio tour, one of the things that people asked is, what'd you learn? As you're going through rural America, what'd you find? Found angry people, and angry for cause. But the sad reality is they've been fed decades of outrage candy, and they're angry at the wrong people. They're angry at their neighbors. They're not angry at the very wealthy where they should be. Be sure to tune in live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. across the Civic Media Radio Network, and have your voice heard.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. Wants to remind a Jean of Eau Claire.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
Wants to remind a Andrew of Detroit.
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
Learn more at She Can STEM. A message brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hey, Fox Valley, if you've got a favorite supper club, we're your station, Civic Media.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
Portions of Native Roots Radio may be pre-recorded.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Cody Cuff, Hindi Cut Again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Kadagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. We discuss local and national Native news and events. And as you know, Ogama, I'm disgusted with disgust sometimes. And you also know Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
And this portion of the show is brought to you by MN350, a grassroots organization fighting for climate justice.
A lot going on. Some battle here that we had that you'll be speaking on. Also today, before we get to Ogama, I just want to say we're going to have Laura Anderson, Health Protection Division Manager at the Ramsey County here in Minnesota, and we're going to discuss some things about COVID-19 and the booster shot, which I've had, and I haven't been sick yet, but I got to find some wood quick. But before we get into that, we got Ogama with the news that you don't hear anywhere else. Ogama, I'm having trouble. I shouldn't have took that midday nap. I'm having trouble talking again.
Hey, Buju, Ani, and relatives. I am Ogama Ganua Kwei, and I'm a citizen of the Red Lake Nation in northern Minnesota. I fall under the Treaty of Old Crossing, and I have some news for you here on Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. First thing is local news to the Twin Cities, if you have not yet heard about the Roof Depot, which is an old site that is in the South Minneapolis neighborhoods, in which the East Phillips Neighborhood Institute wanted to turn into a indoor garden and community space. And they have been blocked consistently by the city of Minneapolis now for about 10 years, trying to get a project like this going. And finally, after the city of Minneapolis had denied them again last week, they took to occupying that space. Many of those members of the East Phillips Institute were arrested. And at the end of it, what they ended up doing today, Robert, which was so exciting to see, is that they testified before a House committee in the state of Minnesota. And they talked to the House committee about what the economic plans for their neighborhood would do, what kind of jobs they would bring, how it could help this community that is historically and presently affected by pollution at a much higher rate than other communities in the Twin Cities. So it was really a beautiful thing to see the members from the East Phillips Neighborhood Institute and Minneapolis City Council member from Ward 2 was there, and, you know, community members and even a former House member was there as well to speak on behalf of this project and talk to the House about it. Initially, there was some pushback from a Republican representative. And, you know, the question was, should we get involved with something where it seems a dispute, you know, within a city? But what they brought up, what these residents brought up, is that the state of Minnesota has actually already funded parts of this project. And the reason that they have the draft and the architectural plans for this is because the state of Minnesota already did do some granting funding for them some years ago. And since then, they've been blocked by the city of Minneapolis. It was really impassioned at the House Economic Development, Finance, and Policy Committee, which is a mouthful, this afternoon, and they actually extended time for the residents to join and discuss and talk about what was important to them with this. It's House File 2093, and it's about appropriating money to the East Phillips Neighborhood Project for the Roof Depot building. And it actually ended up passing the House Economic and Development Finance Policy Committee today, 5-6, with no amendments. And it will move on to the to a further financial committee in the state. And then from there, it would have to be, you know, ratified by the state of Minnesota. So, I mean, it still has a way to go. But this was a big win for the East Phillips Neighborhood Institute. And Rachel Thunder, who I know we've had on Native Roots Radio many times, was there, as well as Cassandra Holmes, who's the director of the East Phillips Neighborhood Institute. And many others were there. And it was a beautiful thing to see, not to mention, you know, just beautiful to see the live House video with Native people packed into the seats behind the speakers. you know, it was really great, Robert. And I hope if you can take a little bit of time to go back and watch that, anybody who's listening. And anybody who's listening and you support the East Phillips neighborhood, make sure you write to your representatives in the Minnesota State House and Senate and tell them to support House File 2093. I'm sorry, I don't have its sister number for the Senate file yet, but we'll get that as we come up. I don't know how you're feeling about that today, Robert.
Wow, you know, thanks for letting me, what I'm feeling is I'm glad that you're able to keep an eye on these things for people that are working, and so that's really important, and I just got to say Pini Gigi to you for that, Ogama. Also, just to let our people in the civic media realm know, in Wisconsin and all around Turtle Island, that's a lower income area, of course, mixed diverse people. And again, the attack on our relatives that seemingly can't fight back financially are doing it in a good way. So again, thanks, Ogama, to amplify their voice. And I guess fighting back helps.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, I think one of the most powerful parts of the testimony that was heard today on the Roof Depot at the Minnesota House was Cassandra Holmes talking about her son that passed away as a teenager. He had a heart condition that he was not born with, that he passed away from when he was 16. And she presented this map of the East Phillips neighborhood with dots on it to the representatives and implored them to remember that those dots are people, those are faces, those are children, and that the people that were there were not just there to build a community center, but they were there because their children are passing away, you know, from systemic racism and from pollution in that area. And they live it every day. And they're there to tell the Minnesota House, you need to help us. And the House, at least so far in this committee, listened today. And I really hope that those ears remain open and they have some success as they move forward. So prayers are up for that. And, you know, I'm wanting to give one more local shout out here to Isabella Starr LeBlanc. She just landed a role in the HBO series True Detective Night Country. She's Sisseton, Wahpeton, Dakota, and from the Twin Cities. So shout out to you and all of the work that you've done to get yourself there. And looking forward to seeing more Native people on the big screen. Right, Robert?
Yeah, definitely. And Ogama, we haven't talked for a few days, but I sent in my application and headshot for a reservation dog. So,
exciting! Yeah. Oh, yeah. By the way, people, if you are wanting to audition for reservation dogs, auditions for reservation dogs are this weekend in Oklahoma on Saturday.
I was gonna fly down there, Ogama, but there was too many flights. There wasn't a direct flight, so I just said, "Well, I'll do it online." So keep your fingers crossed. They'll probably tell me I have to shave this white goatee off. So I haven't had a non-goatee in 50 years. So we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. One last thing I want to touch on. Unfortunately, in the Southwest, the Associated Press reports that the Federal Court of Appeals has actually cleared the way for the construction of the largest lithium mine in the United States, despite tribal and environmental opposition. And we'll have more on that tomorrow. Also today, Robert, before we move forward, we're going to have Kristen Johnson of the Leech Lake Nation joining us today as well to talk about her blog from Residential. So really excited to hear about Native home buying experiences as well.
Oh, wow. Exactly. Excellent. Hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. And up next, we're going to have Laura Anderson. And I'm excited to talk about that. I was just down in South Dakota, and we can compare notes of what's happening all around Turtle Island with COVID. So we'll be right back after this short break. Stay with us. Boost your immunity and help protect your community. COVID-19 is still here, but it's not too late to get your booster. Staying up to date with vaccines can help build protection that has decreased since your last shot and provide better protection against newer variants. Boosters are an important part of protecting yourself from getting seriously ill from COVID-19. To learn more and schedule your appointment, visit ramseycounty.us/COVID-vaccine. ramseycounty.us/COVID-vaccine.
J&S Bean Factory is a Native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
If the statistics say that 1 in 3 Native women and 1 in 6 Native men have experienced sexual assault in their lifetime, it means our whole community is affected by sexual violence. 1 is too many. Don't stand by. Stand up. Don't engage in acts of sexual violence and shut down the dirty jokes, the gossip, the victim blaming and shaming. As a community, we can change the way we respond. Contact the Minnesota Indian Women Sexual Assault Coalition to attend a workshop to learn more.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hi, this is Representative Sharice Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
you by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
I think you were a little muted there, Ogama. You want to run that one by again?
Oh, yep, sure thing. This portion of the show is brought to you by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, we got a groovy guest on here, Laura Anderson. And Laura, before we get going, I just want to say I was down in South Dakota for the 50th anniversary of Wounded Knee, the occupation of Wounded Knee, and doing a lot of outdoor things. But when we were going into the stores there, they still wanted you to wear a mask, which I was pleasantly surprised.
It's a little different up here. I've certainly noticed different communities, masking, there's just a lot of differences out there in terms of what communities will support. And I've been delighted every time I go into a grocery store and I see a couple of us still out there with our masks on. So I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, it was a pleasant surprise. I know I'm quadruple boosted, and the last one was by a Valiant booster. And as everybody knows here that listens to us, my wife's a former pharmacist at the University of Minnesota, MTM pharmacist, and we've been on top of these shots from day one because we know how important it is. And I have, to knock on wood right now, I have not been sick or had COVID yet, but my wife has. And I believe, and maybe you're the expert here today, one of the things is when we have all those shots, we may get sick, we may get COVID, but we're not going to be deathly sick.
That's right. Yeah. So I myself contracted COVID in November of this year. And I was fully vaccinated and boosted, and it really felt like a bad cold. That's the point of these vaccines, and that's the point of the booster, too, is really priming your own natural immune system so that you can fight off viruses. So I'm really glad that we have these vaccines available to us, and I just want to encourage your listeners out there. If they're still on the fence about getting the booster or even, starting that primary series, we are ready and happy to assist folks in obtaining those shots. It's really, really important, particularly for elders and folks with other types of medical conditions who might be more likely to really feel that impact from COVID-19.
You know, when we forget because we have such a short memory, but we had an opportunity in the beginning. We have the head CEO of Native American Community Clinic on most Mondays, and he had COVID, and that was before, and remember, before any vaccines, anything out there, and it was a close call for him. He was in the hospital, and we have such a short memory, Laura.
Yeah, I feel that too. I mean, it's been, 3 years? And the first time I got a shot was, I think, January of 2021. And I was so grateful. It was a total celebration to have access to the shot and to have that sense of relief. Life goes on, people get busy. The feds have told us that the emergency is over, right? So, all of those things combined, I think, can lead people to kind of push it off. But COVID still is here and it can be deadly.
So we have possibly some people that have been so busy, haven't gotten together and haven't had their first or second booster. Can they just jump over and do the bivalent, booster shot? Is there an order they have to take, or can they just jump ahead?
Well, what we recommend is that you at least get that initial two-dose series. That's the primary series, meaning it primes up the immune system. And after that, we recommend one shot of the bivalent booster. So if you haven't started the initial series, probably your nurse or pharmacist or your doctor, they're all going to say, well, let's get you going with the initial series. But I do know a fair number of folks who have gone ahead and got the bivalent. We're certainly not going to stop you. But if you want that full protection, I would recommend all three shots.
So where are we at? I know when the shots first came out, I mean, my tribe in Wisconsin was out there getting amazing. elders done first. And where can we get shots now? I know things have changed and progressed. Where would my relative go in the Twin Cities here?
Yeah, I would recommend going to a local pharmacy, going to your healthcare provider, or coming to a clinic run by public health. We just finished up a vaccine clinic tonight at First Baptist Church in downtown St. Paul. I know a number of my colleagues in local public health are offering both appointments and walk-in clinic availability. So you can actually go to Find My Vaccine, and you'll still find a list of opportunities to get vaccine. You just have to put in your zip code, and you'll find a shot, you know, within a mile of your residence. So they're very available right now. That could change, though. I know we're talking about sort of the end of the public health emergency coming up in May. These pharmaceutical companies have certainly been looking for ways to monetize eventually. So, healthcare in the U.S. is unfortunately it's privatized. So, again, I don't want to make anybody scared, but I do think, you know, while we have access to this free vaccine, and it's the feds have purchased plenty of vaccine for all of us to remain up to date, I think it's really important for us to take advantage of that.
Welcome. I just to that point, thank you so much for bringing that up, Laura. And I was just talking with a friend about this too. You know, the federal government just closed the home testing, the mail tests for free that you can take. And you're going to have to start going to your doctor for these things. And the vaccine companies aren't going to be this generous forever. They put a lot of money into developing these vaccines rapidly to try to help us. And they're not going to keep offering it for free. And if you can get it for free, you should get it for free. Go do it now and don't waste that time, and
absolutely
save your immune system and your pocketbook at the same time.
So they're talking in the future here as possibly to Ogama's point to have a once a year kind of vaccine, that like the flu shot. It took many years for me to be convinced to take the flu shot, and I can say for the last 10 years I have been. And one of the things that made sense to me, my wife said, and Wendy has been on the show, used to be on every night, and I talked to her every day, so was that even if it wasn't the exact strain, it would protect me in the future from a strain that may be more. So can you get it in a little deep on that? Because that's something that's really important, and a light bulb went off in my head when she explained it like that.
Yeah, so every year, you know, scientists look at what's coming out of our partners in the Southern Hemisphere, right? So they take a look at the viruses that are circulating, and they do their best to provide a good match for us. But, you know, the current seasonal influenza vaccine protects against four different variants. So it's a pretty decent option for some protection for all of us in the fall. I've had to do some convincing of my own for especially friends of mine who are in their 20s and 30s, you know, they're like, oh, it's just the flu. But I'm really eager for us to get sort of aligned with the COVID-19 shot and the flu vaccine. I think people are more likely to get those done, you know, concurrently in the fall, as you're prepping for, you know, the winter holidays. Having that maximum protection going into the winter months makes a lot of sense to me. And it's certainly easier to communicate, right? It's not like, oh, you got a shot, but now you have to get another shot. You know, you get it done every year, just like the flu. And it keeps you protected during the months where we are most close to each other, you know, visiting with family and friends and travel. So,
yeah.
Go ahead, Ogama. It sounds like you have a question.
Well, I guess it's not a question. It's kind of like an anecdotal thing. You know, when you're convincing people, my father, who since passed, convinced me when my first child was born about 10 years ago, was when the vaccines cause autism thing was really big. And I was doing a lot of research on vaccines and their safety and efficacy and all that things. And I was talking to my dad on the phone about it. And he's like, look, I need to level with you. He said, it's kind of a crapshoot either way. He's like, but the chances of your child getting seriously ill and or dying from a disease you could have prevented with a vaccine is much higher than the chances of them getting hurt by a vaccine.
Absolutely.
And so technically there's a chance on both sides.
Well, but,
but your odds are much better on the vaccinated side. And that's true with any vaccine that they have. You are much safer vaccinating for just about everything than you are by being not vaccinated.
So,
yeah, I mean, this brings back Robert's point earlier around our memories being so short. You know, infectious disease in the U.S. was we are so lucky to have the access to vaccines that we have right now for a variety of diseases, and it's really improved our lives. So I just want to encourage people to go ahead and get immunized when you have that opportunity.
Absolutely. And Laura, we want them to check their pharmacies and all around here, especially here in Ramsey County where I live. Really appreciate you being on and speaking the truth, because I think it's important and there's so much misinformation out there and gray.
WAUK 540 AM. Frank.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine, again visiting East Palestine, site of the toxic train derailment, comes as a bipartisan group of senators proposes new regulations for the railroad industry.
The bill would increase the maximum fines for safety violations. It would strengthen rules governing trains carrying hazardous materials. It will accelerate the timeline for phasing in safer tank cars.
White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre. The number of dead from a train accident in Greece now rising to at least 43 people. Pennsylvania man facing charges after authorities say the TSA found an explosive device in checked luggage at Lehigh Valley International Airport. Emergency crews trying to reach California mountain residents who are stranded in winter storms. San Bernardino County Board of Supervisors Chair Don Rowe.
Our number one priority is to get our residents the food, the medicine, and access that they need.
This is ABC News.
A fresh approach to finding common ground in the Fox Valley. Civic Media.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Governor Evers wants to spend $3.8 billion on building projects around Wisconsin. The plan gets its first consideration before the State Building Commission in 3 weeks. About half the proposed spending would go to the University of Wisconsin system. Ultimately, Evers' building budget needs to be approved by the Republican-controlled legislature, and history says he won't get it all. Lawmakers cut Evers' spending proposals on building projects in each of his last two budgets. Future tuition increases at the University of Wisconsin system would be tied to the rate of inflation under a bill in the legislature. The Board of Regents froze tuition for the current school year. Governor Evers says he hasn't read the bill. In sports, Marquette beat Butler last night to win the Big East Conference regular season title outright. The Bucks beat Brooklyn to go undefeated in February. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Direct from the Dairy State, it's Extra Sharp Weekends, a three-hour block of Wisconsin-produced radio, Saturdays and Sundays from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m., featuring Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman, The Cripes Cast with Charlie Behrens, and Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown. Enjoy it by the slice or enjoy the whole darn block. Extra Sharp Weekends is radio so fresh, it squeaks. Listen in on the Civic Media station or on the app.
Up North News Radio is Wisconsin's new choice for progressive talk about important state issues. From the team that brings you the news through social media, newsletters, and here on the radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Join me weekday mornings from 6 to 8 a.m.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. We talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
J.R. Radcliffe is coming back to the show. The timeline of Brett Favre's involvement in a welfare scam in Mississippi.
Brett Favre's camp has denied all wrongdoing. Like, he really feels like he did nothing wrong. So I guess he's a little burned by that.
Celebrating all things Wisconsin. As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 11 to 2 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Salad, located off 29th and Johnson and at hazelsnetogo.com.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs. Get up and listen.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
Hey, this portion of the show is brought to you by the Native American Community Clinic, honoring health and tradition.
Hey, we should do that again, but it's live, so forget it, Olga. It warms my heart because you are always so good at this, and then when you make a mistake, I go, okay, I'm okay, because I always make mistakes, and I'm not going to make a mistake with our next guest. Excuse me a second. Had to clear my throat there. I'm going to say Kirsten Johnson, and Kirsten has a blog called From Res to Residential, and we want to talk about housing and how to get us natives going here. And I know years ago, Kirsten, I appraised homes during the crazy part of the 2007-2008 where you turn around and the house is worth $10,000 more, and then the big crash. But this is a very important message you have, and let's talk about you. And matter of fact, my son-in-law is a Leech Laker, and his last name is Johnson too, so we're all related. Welcome.
I'm pretty sure we are, but the Johnson part comes from the ex-husband though, so I'm a Burnett Slack, or the family's up there. So thank you for having me. So some of my background is I worked in real estate. So similar to you, I got my realtor license actually in Georgia when I was stationed down at Fort Stewart in 2005. So that's where I first got interested in it. Came back, out of the military, came back home, just got my license again, thinking I'd kind of get into the boom that was happening or do the Airbnb thing or whatever. And as I started looking into that, I had some issues with the ethics and what Airbnb is doing to our housing market right now. So I had to pivot. So I'm halfway through my class and deciding not to do this route. I started looking into Native American homeownership in general, both on reservation land or in the areas up north of Minnesota where Leech Lake is, but then also around here in the Twin Cities where I live. And what I found was that we are severely underrepresented, and for a multitude of reasons, the generational trauma and repression and income, but a lot of it too is just attitudes and knowledge and understanding of the market. And so what I decided to do is finish out my real estate license and then go into real estate education. So what I'm doing now is guiding new homeowners, and I'm aiming toward Native American, but I am happy to help anybody who is, again, new to the system, who is part of any marginalized community. Right now, I'm specializing with a lot of veterans, single moms, people of color, both Native and not, and kind of walking them through kind of what this game is for the housing market. How do you get your credit score up? What is a debt to income ratio? What kind of programs are available, and what's the catch for them? So yeah, you hear about a startup fund, but what are the hoops that you have to jump through to get that money? I'm doing all the research. That's what my blog is going to be, is kind of putting it into layman's terms of, if this is something that could work for you, here are the actual steps of how to do it, not all the jargon and all the worksheets that government's going to hand you. So that's my goal right now, is just educating in as plain terms as I can.
How can we catch up to your blog, and how do we find you, and how do we get a hold of you if you want to be your realtor? And I think what's really fun is I love correcting people when they say realtor, and I say, no, it's realtor. Yeah, but how can we get a hold of you?
So right now I have, it's rez2residential.blogspot.com, and the two is the number two. So rez2residential.blogspot.com. What I'm working on right now is creating 513C, where we're going to have an Indian or new homebuyer education program. Because one of the hoops I found for a lot of programs, especially national and state programs, is that you have to go through a HUD-approved education program. And a lot of those programs are very condescending and kind of treat you like you don't know how to manage money or you don't know what a credit score is. I like to give people a little bit more benefit of the doubt, or again, put it in terms where we're relating.
You know, right. Who do you use for, sorry, Ogama, I'll get you next. Who do you use for financing? Because I think that's a really important aspect of what you do too, because the realtor I worked with, and this is when we bought this house 23 years ago, that was the first thing he wanted done. So we knew where we stood and what kind of, how many structures, you know. It's like, you know, I want to buy a house, you know, well, is it an attached garage? Is it a four bedroom? Mm-hmm. All these questions, or what can you afford? So do you work with one? And I know my old realtor friend who was doing it for 40 years back then, he worked with many. But only certain ones. So he was exclusive, but he had a few that he worked with.
That's a little bit of what I'm doing. So I do have, I have one lender that knows VA loans really well. So if you're a veteran, I'm going to take you over to her. And then I have the big one for first time and low income homeowners is going to be Neighborship Mortgage. And I'd love to bring them on here too. They're just super, I mean, it's someone who worked for Wells Fargo, saw all of the corruption, saw all the bad, and he wanted to create something better, and he and his fiance are doing it, and they're awesome.
Ogama knows firsthand how great they are.
You do?
That's who helped me and my husband buy our house last year. Jesse over at the Neighborship Mortgage firm. And actually, we just put in a call to Emily recently because we needed to talk about some future planning, possibly with, you know, a parent's house in our life, because that's something that comes up as we start to get a little older. And I was just looking at your blog today, and you have so much great information on what's called the HUD 184 loan, yes. Which is the home loan guarantee program for native borrowers. And me and my husband had initially qualified under that. And we were using, you know, an approved lender and all of those things. And then we couldn't find a house that met the specifications. Mm-hmm. And it was just something that we decided to do, to wait another year or two to buy a house so that we could get a more traditional loan path. But, you know, that's another aspect of it too, that like you get into this and you're like, well, yeah, I've got a home loan guarantee. And you think you're good to go. And then, you know, they kind of just keep throwing things out at you. And even if you do know money management and credit scores and how home loans work and all of those kinds of things, knowing what the next step is in the process and how to navigate all the paperwork and all of that is like, it's an entirely different, it's a foreign language to, I think, just about everybody. I don't know a person, native or non, who didn't need help buying a home.
Exactly. It was good that I married someone that had a better credit score than me. I just have to throw that out there now.
But, I hear you there.
Yeah. But yeah. Ogama, this seems set up when I heard that the name of that company, because we're good friends with all of them, and I know you work personally with them, so that's great.
Yep. Emily and I met up. And again, yeah, a referral from someone where they said, oh, it sounds like what you're doing for us at Residential is what Neighborship is doing on the lender side. And I was like, who are these people? So yeah, I'm just super excited to work with them more. So, and they're mortgage brokers. So they also work with, you know, high income, or they work with other people, but they do know, you know, when we were talking, they work a lot with the Hispanic community. And they said, again, the native loans, like the HUD 184 is a little bit of a blind spot for them. So that's where I said, I'd love to work with them a lot more and kind of take on that sector and work with them there. But like you said, it's not just a, you know, it's not a guarantee. And we see this with VA loans and FHA and other ones too, of just the stipulations that the government puts on what they will let you buy with it is much different than conventional loans or cash buyers or anything else. So again, understanding that what you're really looking for, what is actually required, is, like you said, a totally different language and confusing for smart people. I mean, for, you know, average, smart, intelligent people. So
I'm right in there. Hey, Kirsten, one of the things that I'd like to mention that I don't think enough people mention this, but, you know, you, it sounds like you've been in the business for, what, 17 years, 16 years, roughly? I'm not very good at math here on the fly. I'll have to get running out of fingers. But I think it's so important to remember that to have a realtor with experience. We all know cousins and great cousins that are jumping into the business, and this is what, like, the most important purchase you're going to make in your life. And to find somebody with experience is so important.
I agree. Yeah, experience. And again, a curiosity to really dig into some of this stuff. So you'll sometimes run into people who are like, yeah, I don't know. Like, yeah, HUD 184, never heard of it. I don't know what you're talking about. Versus someone who's like, well, let me read into that. Let me dig into if you really do qualify for this. And again, someone who's willing to take the time. Now, I do this, and I've always done this part-time on the side. So that's kind of the other thing, is I'm also not rushing my buyers into anything. It's like, if your credit's bad, if you're low income right now, yeah, let's take a year or two to really build this up, and I will walk with you the whole way. I'm not going to push you into something that you're not comfortable with. So I think that's a big key too, is just finding someone who's a good fit for you for things like that.
Ogama.
Well, I'm finding somebody who's respectful to where you're at too, you know, like, there's no shame in being where you are today. You know, everybody can get there, and having people that meet you where you're at and go, all right, so I know how to help you along this path, and we can work on this together, and building that relationship is so important. Because initially when we started out, we didn't have anybody helping us with that. We had somebody who was showing us houses, who was kind of trying to push us into things, and then really was disappointed to hear we got the HUD 184 because he didn't know what kind of houses he could show us. And then even our lender didn't even really know that much about the HUD 184. They just had us do the paperwork and we qualified, but they couldn't answer any questions for us or anything. And we got lucky that we got involved with Neighborship Mortgage, and that there are people like you in Neighborship that exist. So if you're looking to buy a house and you need help, I mean, don't hesitate to reach out. There's absolutely nothing wrong with not knowing how all of this works. Okay. And it feels so good to be respected in that way. And like you said, some of that stuff can be really condescending. So I'm really, really glad to hear you're doing this work.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. No, Kirsten, can you hang on for another segment with us?
Sure.
Yeah, or for a few more minutes so we can recap. We had a hard break here coming up. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm here with Ogama, and we're talking to Kirsten and Kirsten Johnson about her blog and a good way to get a hold and get some knowledge and not be afraid to ask questions. I think it's so important that you're reaching everybody, but especially the Native community, because it's a confusing path that sometimes, you know, with different things that are unique to our Native. So we'll be right back. This is Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. Stay with us. Ho-wah.
I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Hi, this is Frank Brown, owner of Minuteman Press Uptown, Minnesota's only minority-owned union printing company. And I have big news. We've moved. Our new building in North Minneapolis is much larger with state-of-the-art equipment. That means we can get your projects done faster. We're on Washington Avenue North off I-94 at the Dowling exit, which allows for quick pickup and drop-off with plenty of free parking. And yes, we still print everything. I moved to MP Uptown because as a black business owner, I want to be in North Minneapolis and help provide jobs. At MP Uptown, we pay above living wages, hire people who have made mistakes in the past, and believe in social justice. We have over 175 Google reviews with a 5-star rating. Let us handle your next print project because when you support our business, you support the community. Call 612-870-0777 or visit mpuptown.com. That's mpuptown.com. We print everything.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
This is Winona LaDuke of Honor to Earth, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio. I'm awake.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
Hey, this portion of the show is brought to you by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Looks like we got to do that over. Ogama Kirsten Johnson, our guest from Res to Residential blog, did not howl.
Well, in her defense, I forgot to warn her. So.
Okay. I would have joined in.
Yeah. Well, you had a big smile, and we appreciate that. And I appreciate your shirt that you're wearing, too, Land Back, and that's One House at a Time. You can use that tagline if you want. Oh, we're here talking about your blog, which is important, but also just like when Ogama chimed in a little bit here, too, the disparities and attitudes that are out there that you as a Leech Laker, knowing our Native community and kin to meet people where they're at. So I appreciate that. And I just want you to give a couple more shout outs to how we can get a hold of you, how we can listen to you. And then we'll let you go eat supper. Ho.
There you go. For now, it's you can check my blog out, restoresidential.blogspot.com. So that's where I'll post. I'm trying to do pretty regular updates of just things as I learn them. You know, again, Native programs, non-Native, first-time homebuyer, all sorts of stuff, basically for Minnesota, though. I'm trying to look for statewide Minnesota-related things. I'm a realtor through Bridge Realty. So if you look them up, they're based in Bloomington, which is nearby to where I live. So that's helpful. But yeah, I think the best way to contact me is through the blog. And again, hopefully you guys are meeting me at the start of something that blows up to be something way bigger. I'm hoping this is a 501(c), a huge, you know, a charity, as something that we can do and really help change the entire culture and educate a whole generation of people to become landowners in their own right.
Yeah, and before we let you go, Ogama, why don't you chime in here? I know you have a couple things to say, but it's important, and I think my eyes really popped open when you talked about these B&Bs being taken over corporately across the country and raising the prices of houses, rents, and everything.
Yeah, you know, today I got the pleasure of watching the East Phillips Neighborhood Institute take over the Minnesota House, a Minnesota House committee. And I chuckled to myself as I was watching the East Phillips Neighborhood Institute people and their supporters speak, because behind them were Native people and they were cheering. And I was like, yeah, Natives in the house. And now you're here today talking about changing those systems too for home buying. So it's Natives in the house twice today. Mm-hmm. And I'm really silly excited about both. So thank you so much for doing this work. And one more time for everybody, it's Rez, the number 2, residential.blogspot.com. You can find support there to reach out to Kirsten and to, you know, get connected and start the process or get help along the way. It's really, it's great to have somebody meet you where you're at.
Exactly. That's what I'm going for. Thank you guys so much for the time and yeah, all the questions. This was awesome.
Yeah, thank you. You know, thank you for what we try to do is be a conduit to our community and bring people on like yourself that are doers and helpers. So we really appreciate you doing what you're doing in a good heart and a good way. So thank you for stopping in.
Thanks so much.
All right. Wow. That was fun, Ogama, huh? Just like the old days, we were doubling up on the interview and things like that. That was awesome.
It's been a little while since that's timed out, you know, with the craziness of life.
Yeah. Hey, well, check it out. I want to talk to you a little bit about in the last bit of the show here. You know, Wounded Knee was another experience for me, and we haven't talked since then. And it was, you know, I just have to say this about Wounded Knee. It was the 50th anniversary this past weekend of the occupation of Wounded Knee. And to meet so many people, there was a lot of different people there than the last time I was there because it was the 50th Ogama. And it's interesting to see ordinary people do extraordinary things. And I think that's one of the takes I had from this weekend, because these people came from all over the country. They were college students. They heard the call. They heard people say, come and help our natives. And they were at that age, too, that, you know, people maybe don't understand this, but natives were not, you know, seen in a good way by the community out there. So it was powerful. It was also you know, heroic for these people to come out there and do these things, Ogama. So it was a good thing, and it was a really good thing to see. And they're getting up in years, so there won't be another 50th, Ogama.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's still plenty of situations where, you know, maybe the Native community is really not viewed in such great light. And I think that that's why, you know, the occupation of Wounded Knee has really held fast as such an important historical event for Native people. You know, we talked about, again, East Phillips neighborhood and their occupation of the roof depot. And, you know, they weren't met really. It's still a space that, you know, Native people are not necessarily feeling welcome in when you go into the legislature or when you, you know, battle your city. And to have those relatives to look up to and to hear from is really a blessing. And I'm really glad that you got to go out there and have that experience in the bitter cold, though. I mean,
a lot of it was inside. And it was funny. Last time I was there, I was with Clyde Belcourt, who's one of the founders of American Indian Movement. And he asked me to go with him. And of course I did. And it was 3 years ago, pre-COVID, when he was still alive. And I remember going up to the gravesite before anyone else was there, and there was, like, no kidding, Ogama, there was 2 or 3 feet of snow, and I fell because I misplaced my stuff, blah, blah, blah. But when we went back, when the March of Four Directions started around 1, most of the snow was gone. It melted away, like, really quick. So I just, it's crazy. I can't even think of people living out there. And we went through the Badlands twice. And one of the times 3 years ago, I was with Clyde when they decided and prayed about, you know, he was a tour guide showing us where they sat within the Badlands and prayed and talked about taking over Wounded Knee, basically. And they didn't want to let anybody else know because the police and the sheriffs and the military thought they were going somewhere else, and they made the stand at Wounded Knee that ended up lasting 71 days.
Right. And again, you know, if it was cold this year for the 50th, you know, it had to have been cold that year too. And I think we forget about, you know, the resiliency of our relatives. Like you said today, you know, we have a short memory and a long history sometimes. And taking that time to, you know, remember where why Wounded Knee is important, not just because of the occupation in 1973, but also because of the relatives lost at the massacre of Wounded Knee in 1890 by the U.S. 7th Cavalry. You know, these lands are important. And
really, really good point, Ogma. And one thing I want to add to that is these things like Standing Rock, Wounded Knee, the fight is starting again, as you've reported here, with the Black Hills is starting up again. That was discussed, but that these people, whether they were in Standing Rock, Wounded Knee, Alcatraz, it sparked something in them to keep on and keep on helping their people and stepping up and saying, we're here, we're not going to stand this anymore. So that's a very powerful thing that I was reminded, and that's the way it's been. And that's why this show started, was Standing Rock. So a great show again, Ogma. Thank you for the news, and thank you always for helping me pronounce names and get people on here. So it's been a good day to be here. We're still here. We are the 7th.
You are listening to your local civic media radio station on
Look through your children's eyes, and you will discover the true magic of a forest.
Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always.